Welcome to the Daily Grind Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Colin Morgan. Listen, are you tired not living a fulfilling life? Do you believe you deserve more? Do you want more? Is it finally your time? If yes, then stick around. I welcome you to the Daily Grind.
Prove it, I'm ready to do it, I can't be afraid now. Put me on the stage now, I'm ready to rage now. I feel like an animal stuck in a cage and I'm ready to break out. So what are you afraid of? Those feelings are made up. Get in the game, your moment of fame, show them what you made of. It's time that we stand up, it's time that we man up. For anyone asking who is the best, we putting our hands up. My time, my time. None of you people can tell me to stop. This time, like the last time, you better get ready to race to the top.
I'm ready to do this, show you what the truth is. I step on the field, it's time to get real. I'm feeling so ruthless.
My time, my time. None of you people can tell me to stop.
Lower the lights down. Hand over my crown. Hand over my heart. I do this for my town. I do this for my crowd. So turn me up real loud. My time, my time. None of you people can tell me to stop.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Daily Grind. On today's episode, we are sitting down with Mr. Vito Glazers. Vito is the CEO of One World Publishing, which helps brands and public figures share their story using celebrities and the media. Vito speaks on stage around the world about how he was able to get featured in BuzzFeed, Entrepreneur, and Forbes, grow his social media audiences to over 250,000 followers, while generating over $1 million in sales while doing so. He enjoys helping people become influencers in their industry and plans to help 1,000 people become full-time influencers in 2020. Awesome episode today, everyone. A lot to learn. As always, be sure you have a pen, piece of paper, sit back, and really dive deep in today's interview with Mr. Vito Glazers. Enjoy. Well, Vito Glazers, welcome to the Daily Grind, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, Colin, and thank you so much for having me on your show. And how are you doing today?
Vito, I'm good, man. I can't complain. We got nice sunny weather here. It's 7 o'clock, and it's still sunny out in Canada, so we're excited.
Well, glad to hear that.
You got it, man. Vito, for people listening to the podcast today who don't know you, being first introduced to you, if you wouldn't mind just kind of explaining a little bit as to who you are and what it is that you do.
Yes, thank you, Colin, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to reach new people here on your podcast. My name is Vito Glazers. I'm the CEO of One World Publishing. We started out in Chicago, Illinois. Now we're 100% based in Hollywood, California, and we also have some presence in Orange County, California, so all over Southern California, and we serve clients all over the world helping public figures and brands tell their story through celebrities and the media.
Interesting. So what does that mean exactly? When I think publishing, I'm thinking like book writing. Is it anything to do with that? Maybe a little bit?
So I just recently got into helping people put together their books, but really what we do is we publish a lot of media. So I do about 1,000 news stories a year for over 150 clients that have used us. And essentially what we do is we help people craft their story in a way that can be presented as like a claim to fame. And we actually get the news media to write stories about them organically, as well as using some different types of new media outlets like blogs and vlogging and social media channels to help people tell their story at a very high level. So what we actually help business owners do or brands do or public figures that have something to share do, we help them craft that story in a way that's appealing to the media. And I call it helping them sell the story. Now, to a lot of people, selling a story might be like, oh, I'm going to take the story about my life, sell it to a book company or sell it to a movie script to be brought to life. But for our clients, sometimes that is the case. Actually, I am doing autobiographies and biographies for celebrities on books, news, and film, all different platforms that we're helping tell those stories. But for the average client, for the e-commerce business, for the entrepreneur, for the course creator, where the storytelling might becomes a sale for them is that we help them basically get stages or get platforms or find places where their audience is at, and then create stories, whether it's published or whether it's live or whether it's video, and we help them connect that story with the right audience. And then also I have kind of a four-part plan that I use to, now, you know, the word influencer is getting thrown around a lot. So what we really do is we kind of create people into influencers within their field of expertise. So first thing that I help them do is we call it follow the money. And we actually help them figure out, okay, how are you going to make money from this influence that you have and from this skill set that you have, whether that's your course or whether you want to sell product, maybe you're a musician, you want to make money off your music. And we help people really figure out where the money's going to come from, which a lot of creative people don't like to put first. But once you put the money first, then we help create a story that kind of drives people into that product and into that service. And once we figure out the story, then we start telling that on very high level media, whether that's, you know, publications like Entrepreneur Inc., BuzzFeed, Forbes, or whether that's, you know, through partnering with the right celebrity like Kim Kardashian or Kylie Jenner or any big celebrities. I collaborated with Deepak Chopra. I work a lot with Ron Jeremy, who's kind of a controversial figure. But a lot of these people have audiences. And, you know, if you're telling your story through the celebrity, it's more likely for that story to get heard. And then fourth, what we help them do is kind of see what's working and then scale the winners, optimize off the losers, like any good media buyer would recommend.
No doubt. Very cool. So how long have you been, how long have you had the company for?
So I've worked in digital advertising for more than 15 years, starting originally in affiliate marketing for the adult industry. I started One World Publishing in 2011. It was the parent company for my affiliate network. And we also did a lot of social media work for celebrities, and I kind of did some agency work. But for the past around 4 or 5 years now, we've been focusing mostly on publicity and digital PR, reputation management, and reputation defense.
Very cool. So, yeah, why was affiliate marketing attractive to you at that time? So obviously you've been doing this a long time, and you were kind of probably one of the early guys to do it.
Really was. In fact, the term affiliate marketing really hadn't been even coined when we started doing it. They refer to us as, you know, like webmasters and stuff like that. So I've been doing this for so long that I've actually watched the term webmaster become the term affiliate. And now the term affiliate is starting to kind of become the word influencer. They're all essentially the same thing, right? You like build up an audience and monetize it through offers.
Yep.
So it was not that it was necessarily that appealing to us. It just kind of fell on our laps. I was working with a friend of mine. We started promoting, you know, different webcams offers and different things in the adult space. I got out of the adult relatively quickly, went into mainstream ads. Advertising, and I worked with sponsors like Match.com, CreditRepair.com, you know, Equifax, all the financial offers. Had a lot of success in that. And then around 2011, 2012, I really, you know, the affiliate world is kind of a high stress world. It's also, you're not really building anything for yourself. You're kind of building other people's brands up. Totally. So I really got more into building up my personal brand, and I really saw the opportunity to, you know, kind of use all this knowledge that I had accumulated doing advertising online for a long time to kind of build real brands and work with bigger celebrities and do more impactful work. And I also was just getting kind of turned off to spending so much time on the digital side of things, like looking at metrics and KPIs and all the kind of, you know, it became kind of like day trading at a point. And that wasn't really something that I was trying to do. And I was really trying to express myself more creatively. So we got into like producing reality TV. I've done, you know, producing our first film right now under our company, One World Publishing. But the news has been like a big part of that because I kind of stumbled onto that accidentally, but in learning how to navigate the media and learning how to navigate new media, especially like with the digital twist, I realized there's a big opportunity there to really help brands tell their story, brand themselves, build authority and credibility in front of the right audiences, and, you know, kind of have this high level platform to share their story on.
Wow. Was the business concept and idea sort of consistent throughout, or like how has it evolved from 2011 to now?
It's really evolved a lot, especially, you know, so news itself has been evolving a lot in our lifetime. And how old are you? You look like we're about the same age, 34.
I'm 29.
29. Okay, well, it's a dark screen.
It's so you'll the beard.
Give me for overshooting that. It's the beard. Well, I'm 34. That's the only reason I guess that. But but either way, like being a couple years apart from each other, we both understand that news has changed a lot, just even in our lifetimes, right? So when I was a kid, the news was really only on like two times a day. You had like the 6 a.m. news and the 9 o'clock news. And there was 2 1-hour news segments, and all the news for the day was told in those outlets. Then cable news came out, and then they started having like full channels dedicated to news. So they had to come up with more news. And now with the internet and social media, they have to be coming out with news and clickbait like every second of the day across tons of publishers. So what's really happened is there's been this big rise in editorial news, right? Where it's basically all opinion. And there's still the same amount of news as there was when we had those two news shows per day. But now the news channels and social media channels and general media channels are just flooded with people's opinions about that news. But the thing is, a lot of the audience doesn't know that it's opinions, right? Like a lot of people take the news as fact. So I've been able to kind of leverage editorial to benefit businesses by basically, since the news is so opinion-based in a lot of publications and a lot of platforms now, we can actually tell people stories even just through the opinion of a writer or through the opinion of a publication. But it's still very credible and a very powerful asset for businesses to use.
What made you take sort of the route or niche, so to speak, of working with, you know, top level performers, whether they're CEOs or influencers, or you call them, what made you kind of want to work with those people?
So I hate to say it, but you know, my four parts strategy is number one is follow the money, right? So it is expensive to create these messages and to distribute them. So you do really have to work with people who have the budget to make it happen. And here's the thing is like, you know, Bill Gates has that famous quote, if he was down to his last dollar, he would spend it on PR. It's really one of the it's a very difficult thing to get people to do, but once you get people doing it and you can teach them how to kind of leverage it. And that's part of what I do as well, is I help leverage, I help people take the PR that they already get and then leverage it to get bigger opportunities for themselves.
Gotcha.
And that's where a lot of the value is actually. So I started working with people who could afford it, but then also every single person that I work with successfully tells me that they get by far the biggest ROI from doing publicity, which is kind of interesting to hear.
Yeah, no doubt. I see it. So, I mean, for someone listening who maybe has their sights set on, you know, working with someone like yourself, but they're just kind of getting started, right? They got that business that they're getting going. They know that they need PR. They know that they need to get more eyeballs on who they are. Like, what would you tell someone like that? What's some good things they can start doing?
So a couple of things that they can do. One of them is there's a lot of places where journalists are actually going to get quotes and feedback from people that consider themselves experts in their industry. But I guess before you could even reach out to that point, I do advise people to really like zone in on what you're great at and really try to position yourself as an expert in that. And you can do that now relatively easily by using social media. You can use Facebook groups. You can write your own blogs and, you know, you can write your own books very easily now. We're doing a program for our clients right now where they basically just write out 12 chapters of the book that they would want to write and just their ideas of what they'd want to cover and then maybe a little framework about each chapter. And then we actually have our team write each one of those chapter titles into a blog post for them. We get them a column on a high-level publication. Maybe it's BuzzFeed, Thrive Global, Huffington Post, Entrepreneur.com. We get people columns. We actually publish your column for you either weekly or monthly with your basically it's almost like a cliff notes of what your book would be. And then once you have 10 or 12 of these column blog posts published, we can actually hand that off to a ghostwriter and they can turn each one of those thousand word articles into 5 or 10 pages, and then you have yourself 100 or 150 page book, and you have to just go through and edit it. But it's all your ideas, and it's really just all about following the structure. So we try to make sure that every client that essentially is whatever they're writing and whatever they're building and whatever ideas they have, there's like a longer term plan, and then we can take books. The goal in the next 3 to 5 years, I'd love to take these books, help people make films about them as well, and just keep telling their story at higher and higher levels.
No doubt. For people who are like, how do you get ROI from media? How do you get ROI from these articles or whatnot? Like, explain to us a little bit of how that works.
So there's actually like a super clear way. Like like a very technical way. So if you have any media buyers in your audience, I do have a large relationship with a lot of media buying agencies who actually come to my company, and they will put their clients through our program to get a bunch of PR. Then they actually take those news articles, and instead of sending traffic like to a sales page directly, they'll actually send the traffic to the news article, which will then indoctrinate the reader through like an organic news piece that's also created to tell a story, right? Like we've put a lot of effort into telling that story perfectly.
Yeah.
So they actually send the traffic to that, and then they retarget people with the sales page after that. And I've heard that the results are pretty incredible as far as what they've been able to achieve in ROI wise using that strategy. Imagine you're sending somebody to a Forbes article or to a CBS News article instead of sending them directly to a sales page. You can imagine how that would be very effective. But another way to get ROI, let's say you're not a media buyer. I'm really not that great at Facebook ads, and that's part of the reason why I got into all these alternative ways of doing media. But one of the methods that I suggest people to use is, you know, one of the misconceptions that people have is they're like, well, I'm going to be on the news, my business is just going to explode from that, you know, and it's it's actually very rarely the case, right? You might get a couple clients. I was just featured in a Forbes article. I got two huge clients from it, but it wasn't expected, right? So like there was ROI on that, so to say. But really the biggest results that I've gotten, I actually laid out in a case study, and I was just speaking about it. I was one of the headlining speakers for Influencer Marketing Expo in downtown Los Angeles. And I did a talk about this case study specifically about how I was able to leverage myself. Basically, I did some PR and I got my story down, and I was able to leverage that story into getting myself featured into Entrepreneur, BuzzFeed, and Forbes. And then I leveraged those news publications to get myself in with some celebrity managers and celebrity agents in order to do some collaborations. And then I took those collaborations and I was able to book myself these high level speaking gigs. And I was throughout that process, I actually was able to do over $1 million in sales for my company without doing any ads at all. So if you want to know like the ROI on it, it's kind of like having assets that you can then use to uplift yourself into higher networks and then basically continue leveraging yourself from there and keep telling and selling that story and, you know, helping people along the way.
Yeah. What I love about it, man, is the strategy that you lay out. And obviously it's something that you're super intentional about, and you're so right, right? Like there's so many people out there who think that an article or a podcast or whatever, a TV appearance is going to be the breakthrough for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But the way you kind of set it out, you'd be very intentional of like, this is step one. Like there's four steps to this process that you obviously you've nailed down. And I love that.
Thank you. And it's funny you say that, because actually literally when somebody signs up for a company, they automatically get an email that says vitoglazers.com/step1. And that's when they start filling it out, and then it goes to step two. And it's like, so I could actually break it down for your audience a little bit. You know, if they really want to know our process, it's very difficult to apply. So I'm happy to share it.
Essentially, if you don't mind briefly. Yeah, sure.
I could break it down really quickly for you. Essentially, what we do is we start out telling your story and kind of nailing your story down on like lower level blogs, like maybe things that people haven't heard of, but that are looking for a post or that will allow you to tell your story on there for little or no cost. So a small business owner, you know, maybe you're a real estate agent, or maybe you're an insurance agent or a chiropractor, you could actually get featured on, you know, blogs and smaller publications that focus on entrepreneurs or the focus in your industry. What that allows you to do is just get practice telling your story, right? Mm-hmm. And it could work similarly with podcasts as well. I love doing podcasts because it gives me an opportunity to kind of refine my speaking game, right? So it's like, you can't be a professional baseball player and then just never practice, right? You have to show up, you have to practice. So every podcast is an opportunity to nail down my message, to clarify my talking points. And you know, let's say we really kill it on this and we get some great information down, we can take this asset and instead of just letting it sit on the shelf and saying, all right, well, that was a great podcast with Colin, I got three leads from it. If I get three leads from it, I'm going to take it, put it on Facebook, have a media buyer sending traffic to it, because obviously the information is resonating. Now we have an asset that, you know, we can use over and over again to replicate results. So the first thing we do is we start on less brand name publications, less brand name podcasts, just to practice and nail the message down. Once you've kind of got a clear idea, you're feeling it, you're comfortable with it, we start to go to a little higher level media, press releases, news releases, trying to get on bigger sites. We get our clients typically published. Our step two would be to get them published on like Yahoo News, get them in the AP News, start getting them on local news outlets. Once they're getting on those things, now I have four or five links. I have some sources. I can take those sources and I can take the clear story, which we call the clear claim to fame. We start pitching that to higher level media like Entrepreneur, Inc., BuzzFeed. And once you're starting to get featured in those, then I can take that. I can go to a Forbes columnist and say, hey, we have this story really nailed down. We were just featured in Entrepreneur, we just featured in BuzzFeed. And, you know, would you feature it? And then more and more, as you basically build it up, higher level places are more likely to invite you or to be able to help tell your story. And eventually it just, like, usually by the time a client's worked with us for about 6 months, there's pretty much no platform that wouldn't love to have them as a guest.
That's awesome. And what would Forbes do? Say someone just reached out cold and wanted to share their story on Forbes. Would Forbes just be like, or is it dependent on the quality of the story and all of that?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, so Forbes is an independent third-party media outlet, right? They're also, they were recently acquired by a company in Hong Kong. So there's like a lot of things going on internally there. They also have like staff writers, there's also contributors. So there's different people that you can reach out to in different ways that you can work with them. Typically, if you were to reach out with them and have no sources and never been published anywhere, it's not just Forbes that this is an issue with, but this is kind of the whole catch-22 of publicity, is that no outlet wants to really be the first person to write about you. Because there's some level of endorsement, of unimplied endorsement that goes behind that. And if you, let's say they do a big article about you and you go off and you rip off a bunch of people using the article as credibility, that can reflect back on them. So they really, that's kind of part of working with us, is we get you through the door, right? So we get you, we vouch for you to kind of get that story rolling. And then we give them sources to pull from so that they don't have to take responsibility for publishing that information as basically their own. So they can say, well, according to this CBS News outlet, this is the story and we're just helping tell it. So it's it is an issue with all those higher level publications. You have to come with your story kind of sourced already so that, you know, there's less liability, I guess, on them as far as selling.
Makes total sense. How big is your team right now? How many people you got working for you?
So right now I have a team of five. We're opening a new office in Irvine next week on the 15th. And I'm trying to scale to 50 by the end of the year. We want to, so I'd love to continue doing our Done For You program, where we basically do PR for people. We help them figure out the money. We help them get all the publicity they need. We help them with the social growth. And then we help them monetize it, whether that's through booking stages or doing webinars or product launches. Yeah. So I'd like to, I'm going to continue growing that and working on that personally. But then I'd also really love to get a course out this year that teaches a lot of the same things for people that maybe don't have the budget but would still like the information. And I really do have a goal to help 1,000 people become influencers in their industry in 2020.
That's amazing. What's the transition like being from, obviously you started, you know, it was just you, right? And you're kind of doing everything. Yeah. Now you're transitioning into this leadership role. What's that been like for you?
So I've been in leadership roles for a long time. I've always managed teams, usually virtual teams, right? So we just decided to move everybody into an office because it's just, especially when it comes to creatives, it's like writers and designers and stuff like that. It's very difficult to micromanage them from afar, right? These are people that really need to be managed and guided because it's not like 1 + 1 doesn't always equals 2 when it comes to creative. So it will be interesting to see us all back in an office and real, you know, living the office life. Yeah. But I always, you know, I'm a career entrepreneur, so I've always kind of had those entrepreneurial struggles between like delegating and scaling, right? And like doing those things. So I think the way I'm handling that is that, first of all, I really like to hire people that I would consider intrapreneurs. They have that entrepreneurial kind of spirit and methodology to them. But I kind of let everybody run their own little department or little world and company within my organization. So it's kind of like people that have the entrepreneurial mindset, they can take charge, they can do their own work. But then it's, you know, basically I'm like the only client that they have. And that's kind of how I've always treated my team. And I think it gives them, gives the people who are willing to put in the work, the opportunity to really, you know, express themselves creatively and fulfill, you know, have some impact on the company. And people that aren't going to work, it optimizes them out pretty quickly.
No doubt. So speaking about you personally, right? I think people are always fascinated with, you know, kind of what makes you tick. What are some things you do on a consistent basis? So for you, like whether it's habits or whether it's beliefs, but just certain things that you feel like you do consistently that allow you to perform at the high level that you are.
So one thing that I'd like to encourage a lot of entrepreneurs to do, which I really, at 34 years old, I just started doing it about 1 year ago, and it's really paid off in dividends. And that's something that I refer to as paying yourself first. So every day when I get up, I used to get up, grab the phone, stress, cortisone, negative, you know, like people on the phone asking for things, you know, just day-to-day business. So now before I even touch the phone, I do what's called paying myself first. And I get up, I clear my head. I do, like, even if it's a quick 15-minute meditation, prayer, whatever you want to call it, just really appreciate all the things that I have around me. I get the workout in first thing of the day. I chill by the pool for a little bit. I do, sometimes I'll even take the convertible out, go for a drive, maybe get myself breakfast. And I do all of that before I even look at the phone. I literally call it paying myself first. It's like, I get what I want out of life first. And then I'm like, okay, I'm feeling good. I own my time. I'm in love with my life. I go into a positive. Then I sit at my desk, you know, for 8 hours straight. I really, like, rarely take a break once I'm actually in work mode. So I'll typically, I work a little bit different day. Instead of 9 to 5, I do 12 to 8. Okay. And I just, so typically I'll wake up. I will do a little meditation, get my workout in, get a little chill time, read my daily goal. And then once I've kind of paid myself first, I'm feeling mentally fit, physically fit, nourished, and mentally stimulated through some reading. Then I try to be at my computer by 11:30 noon. And then once I'm there on that computer from noon, fed, mentally refreshed, physically refreshed, I can go a full 8 hours from 12 to 8 nonstop, pretty seamlessly. And have just 8 super productive hours. I can do like literally 40 hours worth of work in that 8 hour day, I feel like, especially if I have like the support from my team and they're coming through as well. And then basically 8 o'clock dinner time. And then, you know, just kind of chill at night and catch up on some little work stuff if I'm running behind or have side projects. And that's kind of the routine that I found that works for me. But the most important part is, instead of saying, okay, well, I'm going to work, and then if I have time, I'm going to work out, or I'm going to work and handle this stuff, and if I have time, I'm going to read, or I'm going to take care of if I have time, I'll take care of myself. I really found that I'm much more productive and able to deliver at a much higher level by doing things that are important for my health first and then going into work.
I love that. I actually do something very similar, and I found it's difficult to do when you start later. Like, you change hours because you almost feel like, I don't know if you ever feel like this, you're like, everyone else is working at 9. So you feel like, since you're not for a few hours, like you're a bit stressed, but then you realize, like, this is why you do what you do.
Right. Yeah. It's like, why I have the privilege,
of
doing all of that if you're not going to exercise it and you're just going to conform to, you know, every other company's model. So.
Yeah. I love it, man. Well, if people wanted to connect with you, reach out, learn more about what you got coming on in terms of your courses, in terms of what you offer, and just follow along with you, where's the best place everyone can do that?
So I answer every question that people ask me on Instagram. And I normally do a live stream at least once a week. We also do a $100 giveaway on the live stream for the top engaged follower. Typically do those every Tuesday at 6 p.m. We've been missing a couple because I've been pretty busy, but we should be getting back to that after we get the office open next week. You can find me on Instagram.com/VitoGlazers. And you can always check out all our offerings and everything I got going on over at VitoGlazers.com.
Sweet, man. Well, I'll share all those links to make it super simple. And the way we end the show here is we're going to give you the floor today, Vito, and you have the chance to share with the audience a thought of the day. So it could be something you're thinking about or a message you want the audience to go home with.
Thought of the day. I'm going to quote a collaboration that I did with Deepak Chopra. And I said, nice. Deepak, I said, I've built my whole career around helping other people tell their stories. Could you tell our audience a little bit about why it's so important to tell their story? And Deepak Chopra literally said, the whole purpose of your life is to tell your story. The meaning of life is to share your story. So I would like to take the floor, and if I have a moment to resonate with people, the biggest rebuttal that I have is people come to me and say, my story's not interesting enough. Or I'm not interested, you know, like everything you're doing is great, but I don't think people need to hear it from me. And what I want to tell people is, from my experience and from what I've seen, everybody has a story to tell and everybody has an audience that could benefit from hearing it. So don't think that your story is not important. Your story is your meaning of life, and to nail it and perfect it and help use it to help people, that can be your legacy.
Love it, man. Well, everyone, hope you enjoyed today's episode. I know I sure did. If you did, hit that subscribe button, share this out with a friend who you feel like could really benefit from listening. We'll be back with another one. Until then, Colin Morgan signing off. And always remember to keep on grinding.